The Art of Leadership Network.
Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Well, hello there and welcome to the Smart Family Podcast. I'm Tony Newhoff and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Rob Meter. And we are about to get into a great conversation today about teenage behavior and how we respond to behaviors that may look risky or rebellious. What is the most effective way for a parent to respond?
Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about this interview, Tony, because I have four teenagers. You had teenagers.
Yes.
And if you're a listener with kids, you're going to have teenagers. So this is going to be relevant, I think, for every parent who is maybe dreading the teenage years, because stuff does happen. And I think it's hard for us as parents to, you know, we think about our own teenage years and we kind of have our own vision of what we want to happen. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't quite happen that way.
Yeah. Well, our teens are striving for independence, right? They're growing. They're programmed to grow and change. You know, I have to say, Rob, that I know people dread the teenage years. I actually loved the teenage years with our kids.
Actually.
Yeah. And so I think keeping that perspective that it's your job as the parent to keep the lines of communication open, to lead the way in forging the relationship, because they're naturally going to have some withdrawing behaviors and they're going to be searching for independence, but fight for the heart.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what scares a lot of parents is how the teenage years, you know, the consequences just get potentially greater and greater when stuff does happen, as opposed to the younger kids where we can be a bit more protective and have a bit more of a shell or a bubble around them. With the teenagers, you have to let them go and, you know, you lose control. I think that's the scary part as a parent. So, well, today, Tony, a little bit different. We're talking to our guest today, Ann Coleman, who is not so much a person who's, you know, studied and written extensively about parenting and teenage years, but she is a person of lived experience 100%. She is she talks quite openly about what she has gone through with her teenage son and really about how it affected her and allowed her, or maybe forced her, to really dig deep into this and do her homework on teenagers. And so she comes with a wealth of knowledge now that she speaks about on her podcast called Speaking of Teens. She writes about this, but really, I think it's her practical knowledge that's going to make this podcast episode interesting.
Mm-hmm. 100%. She has lived experience and she is also educated. She, she studied law and practiced family law for several years. She practiced as a health lawyer. And then when she went through the events that we're going to talk about in this conversation, she did make a transition and really delved into the neuroscience of adolescent brain development and so on. So, Rob, without delaying this any further, let's get into our conversation with Ann Coleman.
Well, Ann, thank you for joining us today on the Smart Family Podcast. Now, I wonder if you could just share with us a little bit about your journey from mom to attorney to podcast, or maybe not even in that order. I'm not sure. Just tell us a bit how you got to where you are and what you are doing right now.
Okay. So my son was basically born with anxiety. Looking back now, I realize that. But he was a very anxious child. He had lots of temper tantrums. He was then later diagnosed with ADHD. And his anxiety got progressively worse as he moved on into high school. And we, as soon as he hit, I think it was 10th grade, he started smoking marijuana. And unbeknownst to us, for about a year, we didn't realize it. Or that was 9th grade, actually. He started smoking marijuana. When we did realize it, all hell broke loose. Because, and we'll talk about that later, but I have kind of a history in my family of addiction. And I was terrified. And that sent my emotions on a tangent. So we ended up in kind of this big spiral of me trying to make him stop doing what he was doing and him pushing back and getting more anxious. And we ended up having depression and just all kinds of things. Long story short, we had about 2 years of that, just going around and around with everybody spinning out of control. And we ended up sending him to residential treatment for a couple of months. And while he was in residential treatment, finally, we had been through all kinds of psychologists, psychiatrists, counselors, all the things, all the people. But finally, at that residential treatment center, a family therapist said to me, You don't really get it, do you? He was trying to explain to me how to talk to my son during our you know, on camera. At that point, it was Skype back in, I guess this was, 2018. And he was trying to explain to me how to acknowledge my son's feelings, how to validate his feelings of not wanting to be in that residential treatment center at the time, but to, hold firm on your boundaries and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, I have no idea what you're talking about. He said, okay, go buy this book. It was a Dan Siegel book. It was No Drama Discipline.
Yep,
great book. And I'd never heard of Dan Siegel because all of this time after my son was diagnosed with ADHD, he also had dysgraphia, dyslexia. Everything up until this point had been about school. It had been about getting him through homework and getting him to class on time and getting his homework turned in and studying. Everything had revolved around that. So I didn't do a lot of this developmental stuff. Well, so I started reading the book and I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. I see now. I've been missing this whole piece of emotions and how emotions impact us as parents and how our emotions impact our children and their behavior and, you know, all these things together. Then how do we raise kids who aren't falling apart like mine and who aren't spiraling out of control with parents who are, you know, trying to control them? So the bell went off in my head and I was like, oh my gosh. So I kept reading that while he was in this residential treatment center for 2 months. I read that. I moved on to Emotional Intelligence, Dan Goleman's book. And then from there started studying the adolescent brain and just on and on and on. So I've been studying now for the past 5 years. But as when he came home, that's when I started practicing these things. And it took me a while to kind of get the hang of it. And then it took him a little bit to get used to the fact that I was changing and I was doing something different. But it was probably weeks when I started seeing a difference. And I thought, oh my gosh, I cannot believe we went through basically 2 years of, you know, just horrible, horrible, behavior out of me and my son. And this was the key all along. And so that's when I thought, you know, I have to teach other parents about this. I have to tell other parents about this because I'm a pretty smart cookie. I mean, I went to law school. I've got a brain and I had no idea what I was doing wrong. It just never occurred to me. I was totally emotionally unaware and dysregulated. And I knew there were other parents out there who had to be in the same boat because I saw them all around me, other parents at residential treatment and other parents online. So that's when I thought, you know what? I'm going to start easing out of law practice and easing into teaching other parents. And I just started getting online, creating content on social media, and then gradually moved into podcasting about 20 months ago or so. And that's how I did it. And now I'm not practicing law. I'm solely just helping other parents navigate all this stuff with their teens.
So, Anne, if we have a friend who's listening right now and realizes that they have a teen who is spiraling out of control as well, what would be a bottom line takeaway message that you would want all of us to hear today?
You know, I would say most of the time what is happening is that we don't realize that it's our behavior that impacts their behavior. We don't think about it in those terms. When we see our kid spiraling and doing risky things and behaving in a way that we don't want them to behave, the first thing we think is we've got to fix them. we've got to stop this. We've got to get somebody else to jump in and fix them. You know, if they're doing drugs or drinking or, you know, having sex with different people or whatever it is they're doing, our immediate thought is this has to stop and we have to stop it or somebody else does. The problem is that when we start thinking that, or even before we start thinking that, it's actually our behavior that's impacting them. And somebody just asked me yesterday, what do you mean by that? What I mean is that our emotions take over our brain, just like our kids' emotions take over their brain. And when that happens, we're no longer thinking rationally about how do I help my kid through this, or how do I teach them not to be doing these things? How do I love them and support them and acknowledge them and, you know, help them, guide them through this? But we start thinking in terms of, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, they're going to end up dead in a ditch. And what am I going to do? And now they're not going to go to college and they're never going to survive this way. And we start projecting into the future and we're no longer in that moment with our kid, but we're yelling, we're lecturing, we're punishing, and we're, you know, fighting constantly, and there's all this disconnection between us. Anyway, we as parents, we have to modify how we're doing things. We can no longer boss them around. We need to learn how to guide them, not punish them. So we're talking about, you know, negotiating and discussing things, right? No more unilateral rules where it's, you know, this is what I say you have to do. It's more discussion. You're more flexible. You have to work as a team now. You're not the, you know, be all end all leader anymore. So that's basically, I would say, you have to learn to back up a little bit and go at this a different way, or there will be trouble.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying is sort of bottom line is, recognize that there's development that happens into the teenager stage. And as a parent, you need to develop as well. Exactly. Your style needs to develop alongside that. We've actually talked about that on a previous podcast about how your role changes as a parent. And
absolutely.
If you don't, and you know, and that almost, that moving through the different stages almost never happens in synchrony. It always... Either your teenager's ahead of you or you're ahead of your teenager. You're still trying to keep them at home and protect them, and they're wanting to fly away, or vice versa. They are wanting to hide at home and you're trying to push them out of the nest.
Yeah.
So it almost never happens, you know, in sync.
Yeah. And a lot of us don't even know it's supposed to happen. I mean, that's a lot of parents don't realize that, you know, we're supposed to step back and our roles are supposed to change. We think we just have to hold on stronger and tighter and buckle down more. And so it makes it even worse. Not, you know, we're not changing, but we're even clamping down harder because we see them, you know, doing things we don't think they should be doing. So it can be a real mess if you don't understand some of these things.
But I just want to go back a little, because you talked about sort of your journey with your own son. And thank you for sharing that. I know it must not be easy to talk about that, given what you've been through. But it sounds like things were kind of going along. You were dealing with some mental health issues that were being identified. And then it seems like the marijuana use was sort of a spark. Like it was, and as a pediatrician, I kind of almost see it as a bit out of proportion to all the other concerns. And I just wonder where that came from. Because oftentimes when we talk about drug use and substance use, we think about, well, these are coping strategies in a way, right? They're self-medicating usually. And so given what was going on with your son, and that may have been exactly what was happening. So why was that for you such a spark?
Well, it goes back to, you know, to childhood, like we were talking, you know, before we were on air. I mean, everything really goes back to our childhood. And it goes for me personally. My brother, I grew up when I was an adolescent, he was two years younger than me, but he started smoking marijuana. And then he quickly became a drug addict. I mean, he was a drug addict his entire life, from the time he was around 12 or 13 years old until he died several years ago in his 50s. And so my, you know, I'm assuming it was kind of a trauma response almost, that when I realized my son was smoking marijuana, my whole being just went into fight or flight. I was terrified, and I didn't really realize it at the time consciously, but you know, everything in me said, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. You know, I just panicked. And that panic and not understanding what it was, that it was panic or that it went back to my brother or whatever. This was, you know, a couple of years later when I even actually sat down and thought about this, but not realizing that I had no awareness of it. So I had no emotional regulation when it came to dealing with this with my son. I just wanted it to stop. So I was over the top. I was devastated when I found out. And I mean, that's not an overstatement. I was literally devastated because we had talked about it, as you can imagine, over and over and over. You know, my kid is not going to do drugs, not going to do drugs. You know, he was in a private Christian school and we, you know, I mean, we did everything right. And then it happened. And so we thought there for about a year that he had backed up and was not going to do it, and then saw it again. And I just, you know, when they do start smoking marijuana, and it's like people say, you know, a lot of times it's a gateway drug. And when you, you know, it's not so much that they say, oh, well, I'm going to smoke marijuana, I might as well, you know, try all these things. But it's just kind of an almost a persona that a lot of these kids take on when they start smoking weed, as they call it. We call it pot, but they, you know, they start hanging out and that's all they think about. And it's like they get obsessed with it. And, you know, addiction is so easily, you know, it's just so easy at that age because of the way their brain works. And so they just get so enamored with it. It's just amazing. And then they start, just because of that culture, there are just things on the fringes that they start experimenting with.
Well, no, but I guess what I'm saying was that, you know, your perception of a teenager smoking marijuana was so different from your teenagers. Your son thought, well, this is just what teens do, and it's fine, make me feel better. But for you, it was, I failed as a parent because now, you know, he's doing drugs.
Yeah, and I could see him going down the same road. I mean, my first thought is, oh my God, he's going to turn into a drug addict like my brother. And I mean, deep inside my brain, I was not really, you know, cognizant of that, but I just felt it in my bones. This is where we're going. My brother was in prison. My brother was a meth addict when he died. I mean, it was, you know, it was just a horrible, horrible road, you know, to go down. And that just kept flashing in front of my eyes. And I thought, oh my God, I cannot let this happen. So yes, that drove then all of my behavior toward him. My responses were just outsized. You know, they were just, if I smelled it on him, if I thought that he'd been doing it, I just lost all control. And the yelling and the, you know, all of the stuff would start. And of course, when you're yelling at your teenager, they're going to yell back. And, you know, so his anxiety escalated probably mostly because of my behavior, because of my response to him. And then it turned into depression and I still couldn't let up. So, you know, I was out of control and he was out of control. And it just, we saw no end in sight. And that's why we ended up in residential treatment. And I'm glad we did. That's not the, you know, be all end all for every family. But I'm glad we did because it was kind of a restart, a refresh. The seeds were planted in his brain for, you know, all the counseling that he got and mindfulness and all of that. And he says today, he is so glad that he went, that it really, you know, it did make a difference. So
glad that it did make a difference, Anne. I have a couple of follow-up questions to what you've been talking about. One is just some common sense wisdom for parents who, you know, maybe are wondering whether their child is using substances, but, you know, reading the signs can sometimes be tricky. And, you know, we want as parents to really believe the best about our kids.
Right.
And so I know for myself as a parent, I would tend to give my kids the benefit of the doubt, and to the point where I would pretty much live in denial.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not helpful as a parent. So how do you read the signs? And then I'll hang on to my second question until you answer that one.
Well, and I will tell you, I lived in denial for a year because my son started smoking marijuana. Now thinking back, he started smoking marijuana at the beginning of ninth grade, and it was the end of ninth grade, like March, April, before I really admitted it in my head. And you know, the signs that I saw but denied were him coming home from, quote unquote, playing basketball down the street every afternoon, starving to death, and his eyes halfway closed. And it was because they had a cat indoors, out. I mean, you know, how do you, he's allergic to cats. So it was the cat. And I was like, okay, well, it could be the cat. I mean, he probably was inside for a few minutes. And, you know, but in the back of my mind, I thought, okay, he's coming home starving to death. His eyes look, but no, I've talked to him about this since he was a tiny baby. There's no way. And I didn't ask. So, but things like that are, you know, obvious, then there are things with their behavior.
Sorry to interrupt, but trust your gut. You know, we always hear that, but I think sometimes, I know for me, I didn't always trust my gut, and you know, taking that pause to really listen to what your gut is telling you, I think can be super helpful.
And you know, we don't, even trusting your gut, you're like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do now? And I think maybe subconsciously we're like, okay, well, we're just going to push that aside because we don't really know what to do and we don't know what to say. And, you know, so I pushed it aside for a year. Now, you know, other things that you can look for though are when they start changing friend groups, or, you know, suddenly their grades start changing. I mean, it's all the things that we've heard before. You know, they start changing friends, or they don't want to go out and do things with their friends. They'd rather sit inside. Or, you know, when their behavior, when you see a drastic change in friend group, a drastic change at school with grades, anything like this, then there should be a conversation, and there should be, you know, should be some questions at least, because what you want to have instead of a, you know, an accusatory, I think you've been smoking weed, or I think you've been doing this or that. And I'm not an addictions counselor by any means, but what I talk about is communication. And, you know, the main thing is not freaking out. And that's what your teen does not want you to do. Please don't freak out like I did. You know, the crying or the screaming or the yelling or the lecturing. I was researching studies on marijuana and what it does to the teenage brain. And I was literally reading to him from studies, like my 14-year-old wanted to hear that. So, you know, you have to think, okay, the most important thing here is to keep your attachment, your connection in place with your child. Because if you lose that because you're wigging out over what you think they might be doing, then you've lost the battle already. You're done, because your teen, they act like they don't want to be connected to you. They don't want to be physically around you that much anymore. You know, they act like they can't stand you. And in some cases, they don't really like you all that much. And sometimes we don't like them all that much. But, you know, they still need that emotional connection. So if you're wigging out on your kid, what that's going to do is tell them instantly that I can't let them know anything. I can't tell them things. It'll backfire. I can't trust them. They'll punish me. They'll get angry. I don't want to deal with that. It's too much for me. So that's the very first thing, is when you, if you do see these signs, you want to ask your kid, you know, I've noticed, you know, X, Y, and Z. I've noticed you're not hanging out with Susie anymore. You know, what's up? What's going on? And that is borrowed from, I think it's Dr. David Green, who, I think that's The Explosive Child, the book.
That's Ross Green.
Ross Green, Ross Green. Thank you. I don't know why I keep wanting to call him David. Yep. So, you know, he does, I want to say it's collaborative problem solving, but he calls his something else, but it's, you know, I think Harper Stanford has that, that trademark. But anyway, so he says, you know, when you notice something like this, and he doesn't say it particularly about drugs, but I will say, I think this is one of the best ways to start the conversation with just about anything, is to say what you've noticed and then ask them, you know, what's going on or what's up?
Yeah. Well, that's respecting their autonomy too, and that they have a voice, and that's what that collaborative problem solving is.
Exactly. Mm.
So, Anne, secondly, my second question was just about the developing brain that you mentioned earlier, that a teen mm-hmm. is more liable to experiment with substances. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so what is it about the teenage brain that right. would make maybe a 14-year-old more susceptible than a 34-year-old to right. Saying yes to an offer of drugs?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's terrible. It's a good thing and a bad thing that, you know, during adolescence, as soon as puberty hits, the reward system in the brain revs up. It like goes into hyperdrive. And what that means is that, and again, this is evolutionary. What that means is that kids this age in that 12, 13 and up range, they are going to want to experiment with new and, you know, novel things. So anything new and exciting, and they're going to want to get out there and have fun. And the thing is that reward system tells them that things are so much fun that they should just kind of sort of a little bit ignore the consequences of what might come. Like, they understand there are consequences. It's not that they don't understand. They get that there's some consequences to this behavior. Like, maybe mom will catch me smoking weed, or maybe, you know, if I drive too fast, I'll get a ticket or whatever. But you know what? It's so much fun. I've just got to do it anyway. That's the way it works in the brain. So, and that reward system is so much stronger during adolescence than in childhood, or it ever will be in adulthood. It calms down as the prefrontal cortex, you know, comes together. It kind of is able to calm that reward system down and give them more pause to think about what might happen. But during adolescence, that's not the case. And when they, because of the way the synapses between their neurons and their brain are strengthening and being pruned during adolescence, then when they do try something and they do like it, and that reward system says, hey, we need to do this again, and they do it again, and then the reward system says, hey, that was even better, let's do that again, the more they do it, the more those synapses in their brains strengthen for doing that particular thing.
You know, we talk about on average, you know, these are what the studies show, but exactly. When you have a child, you have one child in front of you, and like you said, everybody's going to be different. What I love, Anne, though, you know, to kind of summarize our conversation, because I can't believe how time flies when we've been chatting about this, and we could talk much longer, I'm sure. Yeah. But what I love is that how, you know, you saw a crisis develop in your family, and ultimately you resolved the issue by looking at the relationship and looking at how you were connecting with each other. In other words, it wasn't like your kid became a problem to fix. It's like, how do we work on our relationship? And that then solves, I wouldn't say solve completely, but it certainly helps the issue that you're trying to address.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, if I could say one thing that I think, you know, the first thing I learned, and this is what parents really, really need to learn, is emotion coaching. And that is, you know, Dr. John Gottman, who also, you know, you hear about him in relationships, you know, marriage counseling, that's the Gottman method. But he also looked at families and children and parents, and he discovered that a type of parenting style, you know, emotionally speaking, the emotion coach, and that is what that first book I read by Dan Siegel was really describing. He didn't call it that in the book, but later I discovered that's what it was. And it's just all about validating acknowledging your kid's emotions. I understand that you're feeling angry right now, or I get that this happened and this caused you to feel frustrated or whatever, but acknowledging that rather than invalidating, which that is all I did, invalidating by saying, oh my God, please calm down. Don't get so upset, or it's not that big a deal, or I promise it's going to be okay, or jumping in and fixing it for them, or jumping in and giving them advice. All of those things are invalidating. And if you can figure out how to make them feel, more validated, that they have a right to feel how they feel, and waiting about correcting the behavior, like being disrespectful to you, throwing a fit, stomping their foot, whatever it is, talk about those things after they've calmed down. And they calm down when you listen and you validate, and you may even put a hand on their back so their brain will release a little oxytocin and calm everything down. But, learning emotion coaching, Google it. John Gottman has a book. I have a free guide on it. I mean, just figure that piece out. And also figure out your own emotions. There's a wonderful book called Emotional Agility by Dr. Susan David. She's a Harvard professor. And this book is just gold. Figuring out your own emotions, becoming more aware of them, helps you become more regulated. And that's the one thing that most parents don't have figured out. They're not emotionally regulated. Our kids are not emotionally regulated either. But they've got a really good excuse. Their prefrontal cortex is not ready and it's not helping them much. Our prefrontal cortex is done. It's done. It's done. We can do this. And if we can do this, that's half the problem right there. So yeah. Emotional Agility is a great book. Get that. Learn emotion coaching. Calm yourself down, and then you can help your child calm down and learn to have conversations rather than trying to control.
And this has just flown by. I'm wondering where we can go to access your guides and the other resources you have and your podcast.
Sure. Well, and the podcast is called Speaking of Teens, and you can go to speakingofteens.com/podcast, or you can just search it on any podcast app. If you go to the website, speakingofteens.com, there's a tab that says free resources at the top, and that's where all the free parenting guides are, and a book list and all kinds of good stuff. So, and we have all the socials and everything is on the website. You can find us all over the place there.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Well, Rob, one of the things I loved about our conversation with Anne is that her passion is so obvious. She really wants to share what she's learned about the neuroscience of teenage brain development and, how you can relate better to your teen who's going through a struggle, and share that with parents to help them deal with these issues more easily than she was able to on her own.
Absolutely. And, it's extra, there's an extra punch to all of this because she's gone through this herself. It's not just academic, it's personal. And I think that really is important in this conversation. And it's amazing how much she packed into every single one of her answers. There are just so many nuggets there. We always wrap up with three or so points that we would love our listeners to walk away with. And Tony, I think the first one for me would be, to open up a conversation with your teenagers. Don't start with, say, the accusation, like, are you doing drugs? Just talk to them, ask them some questions, some open-ended questions, and then just move towards what's up. Or ask why, and rather than kind of just dropping the bomb right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even it can be very conversational. Like I've noticed that your eyes look droopy at the end of the day.
Yes. Yeah.
What's up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I can't say enough how much I resonated with "Don't freak out."
Right.
Don't freak out. Don't freak out. It's one thing that'll shut your child down, and that's not what you want. You want those open lines of communication.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes just smiling and nodding. I've done that many times. Then the other thing that I would love to highlight is, and this came through so loud and clear in Anne's message today, was that solving teenage issues is often more about the relationship than about the issues themselves. And sometimes the issues will resolve themselves when the relationship is in a healthy place. And I think Anne realized that. She tried to fix it. She tried to fix her child. She tried to fix the issue and then realized, okay, there's something in the relationship that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. So again, just fighting for the relationship, that's a term we've used in previous podcasts as well. Mm-hmm. Really important.
Well, that's it for today's episode. If you've enjoyed this, would you please share it with a friend, share it with somebody who could use the information at this point in their lives? If you have a topic that you'd love us to dive into, we are so open. You can find us on Instagram, or our website is smartfamilypodcast.com. Just shoot us a message and let us know what you would like us to address, and we will do our very best to jump on that. That's it for today. You know, we love to talk to experts and now sometimes people with lived experience to help you with the challenges you face at home. We want your parenting and in your marriage. We want you to enjoy success. And we bring you these conversations because we want you to love being home.